Shouts, it's a little after 4 o'clock on April 23rd. We're here at the headquarters of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. My name's Bart DeZivi, and this is Scott Gans. We're with the FCIC, and we're here to interview Bart Stermasi. If we could have the other people from the Federal Reserve identify themselves for the record.
Shari Leventhal from the Legal Group.
Stephanie
Ruiz
from the
Legal
Group.
Jennifer Schuster from the Legal
Group. So why don't we start with some background information. How long have you been with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York or the Federal Reserve System?
Federal Reserve Bank of New York, 12-plus years. Joined the bank in 1998, February of 98.
And what position did you have when you joined the bank?
I was a bank examiner. I'm currently a supervising examiner.
And are you on the CPC side or are you on the risk side?
Currently on the risk side.
And are you currently, how long have you been on the risk side?
Out of the 12 years, probably about 11 of those years have been spent on the risk side.
The previous 11, or have you gone back?
Kind of.
Why don't you walk me through it then?
Okay, sure. Joined the Fed in 1998 and spent the first, our risk relationship structure began in 2000 or 2001. So prior to that, I was doing mostly capital markets examinations between 1998 and 2000. Between 2000 and 2005 or 2006, 2006 was doing market and credit risk examinations, focusing on counterparty credit risk. Various market and credit risk. 2006, joined the Citigroup CPC team for approximately 7 months. And then following that stint, rejoined the credit risk examination department. So that's basically from 2007 to the current time is when I've been in credit risk.
So you were with the CPC for only 7 months.
Yes.
That's a fairly brief tenure.
The reason I left the CPC team was that I actually began negotiations. Citigroup approached me about a position. So in order to avoid a conflict, I removed myself from the team.
Gotcha. So it's my understanding that one of your tasks in 2005 forward was reviewing Citigroup's compliance with the written agreement with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York governing structured products to what I'm referring to as the post-Enron agreement.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. So what we've previously marked as F-21 is a copy of that written agreement. So I assume you're intimately familiar with it.
I was. I guess I will be again.
So why don't you describe to me what sort of the general purpose of that agreement was. And let's start with that.
So the written agreement contained various provisions around the desire to get to have Citigroup develop a risk management program, a risk management framework around their around addressing legal, specifically addressing legal and reputational risks around structured finance transactions. So those provisions involve traditional risk management provisions such as transparency, documentation of policies, thorough transaction review processes, those types of things. But they were primarily directed towards having the firm focus on legal and reputational risks associated with structured finance transactions, such as those that involve the Enron and Citigroup.
Okay. Where are we at in our document numbering? 26?
28.
Let me check.
28.
So this one's 28? Okay. So it appears that beginning in 2005, you began looking at sort of the compliance with this agreement by functional unit,
I use that term more often, and the distinction there was between the business lines have their transaction approval and control processes versus a committee, higher level committee approval processes.
Did you pick that format, or did someone suggest that format to you?
In order to conduct a comprehensive review, in order to address the provisions of the written agreement, we did not want to focus on only the higher level, committee level structures. We also wanted to ensure that these provisions were actually taking hold of the business line.
Okay, so I've marked as F28 memo to file from you, dated January 6th, 2005, and the Bates numbers are 80 and 81. The topic of this memo is ARR, which is audit and
risk review.
Audit and risk review, and PCAG, which is policy compliance
assessment group.
I assume this was your memo. Is that right? Under the first bullet point, it says PCAG reviewed 964 structured finance transactions and 112 tax transactions globally during 2004. Tell me what PCAG did when it reviewed a structured finance transaction, if you can.
I can only recall broadly. I don't remember the specific criteria that they used.
Okay.
But broadly, PCAG was a unit within the internal audit function of Citigroup that was set up specifically as part of the firm's remediation plan. So they were tasked with actually doing transaction reviews, which would mean looking at the transaction, looking at the supporting documentation of a transaction, speaking to transaction originators if necessary, ensuring that the transaction hit all the various control processes and mechanisms throughout the firm.
And there was another group at Citigroup. It was called the Capital Markets Approval Committee.
That's right,
CMAC.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me the difference between a new product being reviewed by CMAC and a new product being reviewed by PCAG, how those processes differed?
Sure. CMAC, two distinct approval or review. PCAG would not approve a transaction. PCAG was a sort of a audit function, which did transaction reviews to ensure proper adherence with policies, which is a very traditional audit role. CMAC, on the other hand, was a very similar to a risk committee where they would vet the various aspects of the transactions, both economic aspects of the transactions as well as legal and reputational and accounting aspects of the transaction, and actually either approve the transaction or suggest that they either approve or disapprove the transaction or suggest some type of amendment to the transaction and then ask for that to be resubmitted for approval. So it was the CMAC group was generally consisted of fairly senior level risk management and legal and accounting management as well.
So in looking at the second page of this, the second paragraph, the third sentence, additionally, credit risk due diligence, another WA provision, continues to be reviewed as part of distinct audits, most recent 4Q04. Can you translate that into English for me? As a layman, what are you saying there?
So in addition to this PCAG unit, the internal audit function of Citi would conduct various type of control validation audits. And an area that they would address might be various credit risk management functions. So I believe that line refers to the fact that in addition to, I think I'm documenting that the range of activity, the range or the breadth of internal audits coverage of some of these provisions would be not just through their PCAG group, but also through a broader, more traditional audit of a risk management function.
So you're saying here that credit risk, even though it's in the written agreement, is being reviewed outside of PCAG. Is that
credit risk? I'm just credit risk due diligence.
Another WA provision continues to be reviewed. But what you're saying is it's reviewed by someone else other than PCAG. Is that right?
Well, it could be reviewed as part of a PCAG audit as well, because if they're reviewing the documentation associated with the transaction, they're actually reviewing all the credit memorandums that are in there anyway, and those are due diligence type of memorandum. So I think I'm clarifying how I interpreted internal audits coverage the way they presented it to me.
So I'm not sure I completely.
So I'm saying that this written agreement provision,
right,
meaning due diligence, can be covered through the PCAG function of audit as well as a broader, more traditional audit.
So it could be covered by,
yes,
either group.
Okay.
Yes. So the next document, F-29, is a memorandum dated February 10th, 2005, to the file from you regarding Citigroup alternative investments compliance with written agreement. Want to take a look at that? Oh, excuse me. Bates 72 and 73. Mm-hmm. So take it that's a, this is your document
yes.
as well. Can you generally describe what the topic at this meeting was from reviewing that memo, if it refreshes your recollection?
So this memo, in addition to the prior one that we just looked at, were part of the planning process, which is a process that we go through before we actually execute an on-site examination. And generally what happens during the planning process is that you meet with various parts of the firm to further develop your understanding of the firm's structure, relevant control processes, and learn about how management actually structurally has set up their function. And so, as I stated here in this memo, the purpose was to gain a better understanding of CAI, which is City Alternative Investments, specific control processes, because my intent with this examination, once executed, was to gain a much better understanding of the various business, the control processes at the business level. So I did not want to just focus on the corporate investment bank. I wanted to also focus on the consumer group and CAI in order to get better breadth of firm coverage.
Okay.
So this this just documents what was discussed at that meeting, which was a general overview of how the firm, how that particular department addresses transactions that have heightened legal and reputational risk.
Okay. Next document, F30, Bates number 876 and 877, a memo to the file February 23rd, 2005. Did I skip a number?
No, I just wanted to see what the title was. I think it was for my own.
This is regarding Citigroup's risk architecture. Why don't you take a look at that? I assume this is accurate as well. This is your memo.
Yes.
Tell me what you meant by risk architecture and what sort of the purpose of this meeting was.
So the risk architecture group is essentially a function within Citigroup that is responsible for a lot of their risk reporting, risk aggregation, and actual risk reporting infrastructure. So the firm often refers to it as the plumbing of their risk organization. So it involves a lot of IT infrastructure and management information system infrastructure and reporting. So the purpose of the meeting was to gain a better understanding of how this function's role in reporting complex structured finance transactions, because obviously that was the focus of the planning as well as the on-site review.
So when you say aggregation, are you talking sort of a pure IT? This is kind of where, you know, the information funnels into one sort of database, or are you speaking about a risk manager who is going into the various silos and saying, all right, in this unit there's subprime mortgage exposure based on this kind of product. On this other silo there's subprime based on another kind of product. Let's add those two together and actually sort of builds the system, which...
More of the former in the sense that this organization is essentially the nuts and bolts of that system integration, system reconciliations, and then the translation of that system data into actual reporting systems. So they would feed reporting. They would actually be responsible for creating the reports that the risk management organization would use.
So at the bottom of the first page, the last two sentences, CSFTs and related trends among large clients are also incorporated into weekly and quarterly business heads meetings as applicable. At these meetings, Citigroup's head of risk, Dave Bushnell, meets with the bank's main business management in order to discuss risk management issues and challenges. Mm-hmm. Close quote. So is it at the business head meeting, would that be sort of more the policy interaction with Mr. Bushnell, where instead of doing the plumbing of the aggregation, that they actually say, in your business unit, we've got this exposure, in my business unit, we've got that exposure, and that would that be where sort of the aggregation in that sense occurs or not?
The way the firm described it, that's correct. That's where, at those meetings, is where they would actually discuss exposures and resulting actions. So they would leverage the information that this risk architecture group produced.
And during, he wasn't listed as an attendee at this meeting.
Who's that, Dave Bushnell?
Dave Bushnell.
That's right, he was not there.
But did you have occasions to meet with Mr. Bushnell?
Not during this review.
Outside of this review, have you met Mr. Bushnell?
On one occasion during the... during my time on the Citigroup CPC team as a credit risk coordinator.
Okay. So the next document, F31, Bates number 306. To 326 is a let's see what's in it. It's the target review dated May 3rd, 2005. Are you familiar with this document?
Yes.
So it appears to me to be sort of what in a prior life we used to call a scoping memo.
That's right.
Why don't you describe it for the record, what it is?
So it's my documentation of the planning process, which resulted in a scoping memo. So I'm articulating in this document what our supervisory strategy and approach is for conducting an on-site examination to assess the compliance with the written agreement provisions. So I'm providing background information regarding the provisions, summarizing my knowledge gained from the various meetings during the planning process, and trying to include some additional information which will provide the reader with context, enough context to understand and justify the examination approach.
So, turning to page 10. 10. That first paragraph is sort of like an executive summary. Is that right? You're sort of saying here's what the basic objectives of this review are?
Yes.
And in the last sentence of that paragraph, you say, as noted, Citigroup has implemented a matrix control structure to address the risks outlined in the written agreement. Do you recall what the matrix control structure was?
That's actually referring to the fact that these provisions were not met by one particular control function. So the firm has developed, as most firms of this size do, they develop controls in various parts of the firm, both at the business line level as well as at the corporate level. So these provisions were addressed by all of those controls, not just one particular control. So I was trying to convey that there were various control mechanisms in place at the firm. An example of that would be involvement of not just the risk management function for a particular risk, but also of accounting, legal, tax, senior management as well. So that lends itself to more of a matrix approach where many, many disciplines are involved.
So the next document I'm going to refer to is one we've previously labeled as F4, Citigroup Written Agreement Review. This looks to be a work paper, worksheet prepared by an examiner who I assume was working underneath you. Why don't you take a look at that?
That's right.
So why don't you take it's a two-page document. Why don't you just take a minute to read. Three-page document.
I'm having two.
This is 6.43 to 6.44.
So, as I understand it, this is a worksheet that pertains to what's known as a liquidity put on a super senior CDO. After having read this, did you review this at the time it was prepared? Would have this been sent to you as part of the...
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you tell me what you know about liquidity puts on super senior CDOs? What did this mean to you at the time you read it back in June 2005?
Well, I should just start off by saying I'm not an expert on these kinds of this particular kind of transaction. This particular examiner was from prior industry experience. What our just taking a step back, our broad objective for this review was not to opine specifically on the economics of the transaction or whether the transaction sort of should have been approved or disapproved solely based on the economics. Our primary objective for looking at these transactions was to ensure that the control processes and the control mechanisms surrounding legal and reputational controls were active and evident. In this particular case, we wanted to get a sense of the dialogue and the review process as it went through the CMAQ committee. So the description here in the transaction details is providing just a broad sense of the transaction parameters based on the file review of this particular examiner. It wasn't intended to be a comprehensive summary of all aspects of the transaction. So there could, I guess my point is there could be elements of the transactions that are missing. So it's difficult to actually provide a good summary of it.
Okay. So the purpose of this review was limited in its scope. Would that be a fair assessment?
That's correct.
And the scope was to determine whether or not this particular proposed transaction complied with the written agreement.
Right. It was used as a transaction to evidence how those provisions and the remediation plan that the firm put in place, how they were functioning. So it was used as a form of evidence of those processes actually functioning.
So in that second paragraph under the transaction details, second sentence, Citi undertakes additional risk in this transaction as it is obligated via put mechanism to fund the super senior tranche in the event the issuer cannot roll over its CP. Next sentence. Historically, even in times of severe market turbulence, i.e. Gulf War, LTCM, the commercial paper markets have always cleared at some price. The credit risk is also mitigated by the fact that Citi is senior to other AAA, AAA, junior pieces within the capital structure. So the examiner was doing a sort of very summary.
That's right.
Explanation of the credit exposure, but this was not a full credit write-up.
No, and he may have gleaned some of that summary description from the documentation that was in the credit approval process.
Would it have been normal or unusual for someone doing a limited scope review such as this to then contact someone who's got a broader portfolio of doing a credit review and saying, we've seen this new structure, this liquidity put on a CDO, and maybe you should take a look at it? Or do they basically just sort of stick to their own knitting and
meaning, would they contact another examiner?
Yeah, would they go? So you're doing this sort of narrow scope. Are they complying with the agreement, right? And there are other people at the Fed and doing sort of a broader credit review at some point, right?
But not at the same time.
Right.
Okay.
So would this person, as they go through these files, would it be common or would it be unusual for them to contact some other part of the team who is doing a different substantive thing?
We do many types of credit reviews So it would have been rare that a credit review focusing on just CDOs, given that CDOs are credit risk is an aspect of CDOs, but it's essentially a capital markets transaction that embeds both market and credit risk, as well as operational risk and lots of other risks. So it's at the time, if the examiner felt that they didn't have an understanding of the nuances of a CDO structure, there are other resources at the bank that they could have pursued.
The next document, which we previously marked as F5, is another examiner worksheet with another CDO. Mm-hmm. Want to take a second to just take a look at that? Uh, 32 to 34. So in the transaction details, it says Brera. CDO 1 is used to hedge exposure on Citi's ABS CDO desk. Notably, it's retained first loss position on two other ABS CDOs, Tempo CDO 1 and High Tide CDO 2 transactions. So in looking at this, basically what it's describing, as I understand it, is using one CDO to hedge another CDO. Is that your understanding from looking at that as well?
Roughly. It's unclear whether it's hedging a portfolio of CDOs or one particular type of CDOs.
Do you know how that would be done? How effectively how you have one CDO that you use to hedge another CDO?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Going to page 2, it says under exam work, during the approval process, the marketplace became aware of a lawsuit filed against Barclays over CDO mis-selling and suitability issues. The CMAC chair decided that a discussion and sign-off on franchise risks in light of the Deutsch case would be required. Franchise risk approvals were obtained from Richard Moore, Mark Watson, Christian Gansmuller. Do you have a recollection of those events, or
related to this transaction?
Yes,
I do not.
So when you would have received this worksheet, I'll just go into the next document before I ask a question. What number are we at?
32.
So the next document I'm marking as 32 is Bates number 1 through 26. And it is a document dated November 3rd, 2005, and it's the targeted review of the business level control process. So just to flip to pages 12, 13, 14, essentially it lists 35 different transactions, which I presume all had write-ups similar to the two we just looked at.
That's right.
Number 33 on the list here on page 14, for example, is the puts.
Mm-hmm.
So as when you were putting this memorandum together, how detailed was your review of the component memos that had been produced as examiner worksheets when you were producing this memo? Did you review all the examiner worksheets? Or
yes.
You did? And did you have discussions with the examiners?
Yes.
Do you recall discussing the liquidity put transaction with Greg?
Only in broad terms and as part of his description of the deal. We weren't there to evaluate the CDO business of Citigroup at the time. Again, it was that transaction, and all of these transactions were a means to an end, in the sense that end was not an assessment of the CDO business. The end was to assess the effectiveness of the controls related to the provisions of the RIN agreement.
Did you have discussions with anyone from the OCC regarding their review at the same time, or their review of compliance with the separate written agreement that the OCC had in place?
During 2005 or during this review?
During 2005.
Yes.
And who did you have discussions with?
I believe the examiner's name was Bruce Johnson. He was in charge of their work related to the OCC's written agreement.
And what do you remember? What the scope of those discussions were?
Mostly, in some cases, we attended joint meetings with that the firm held to brief us on their remediation plans. In some cases, there were update-type logistical conversations where we discussed our approach, our examination work. So these documents were shared with the OCC. Just general coordination-type discussions.
Right. So on page 6, under pure benchmarking. The second to the last sentence. It should be noted that given the challenges of complex structured finance control issues, industry participants are still struggling with the development of appropriate controls for structured transactions in general. Can you amplify that and explain that sentence to me?
So given the inherent complexity of these types of transactions, it's difficult to create one or a simple control structure to address them. In a sense, you have to create a control structure that is commensurate with the risks in the transaction. So the industry as a whole was evolving and developing their control mechanisms to address these types of transactions. And firms did this to varying degrees.
In looking at the liquidity puts in particular, I'll represent to you that I have actually looked at the CMAQ minutes for the approval of liquidity puts. And in looking at the liquidity put, they designed it with a term of 364 days and built it with a structure so it was purposefully designed to get a zero risk weighting for risk capital purposes as opposed to, say, a standby letter of credit or another kind of conventional backup facility. At any point in this process, did anyone discuss with you the difference in the nature of liquidity put versus other backup credit enhancements and the difference in capital treatment?
Did anyone at the firm?
Did anyone either at the firm or did anyone on your team discuss with you sort of the nature of that difference between a liquidity put and other types of credit support?
No.
I think you said later that you were involved in the credit review. Is that sometime after this? Is that correct?
I was on the CPC team as a credit risk coordinator.
Credit risk coordinator. Right. Did the liquidity puts come to your attention at any time during that tenure as the credit risk coordinator?
I can't recall.
So a document we've previously marked F8, Bates number 42 to 44. It's a letter dated September 25th from Homer Hill to Mr. Rollauer. I want to take a look at that. Did you participate in the preparation of this letter?
Yes.
And can you summarize for me, and if you need to take a while to read it, can you summarize for me what the purpose and message of this letter was?
The purpose was to communicate to Citi that to summarize the findings of our recent review during the prior months leading up to September, leading up to this the date of this letter, September 05, to confirm our scope of assessing the business level controls. Articulating specific enhancements to business level control processes to management. As well as additional recommendations to ensure proper validation by internal audit and compliance. So it was essentially a an examination letter, a communication to the bank, summarizing our findings.
So in this third paragraph on the first page, nevertheless, management must continue to strengthen business-level control processes surrounding complex structured finance transactions in order to ensure that such processes become embedded in Citigroup's ongoing risk control infrastructure. What are you referring to there? What processes were you saying they needed to strengthen?
Well, in the prior paragraph, I talk about how individual businesses have enhanced transparency, accountability, and overall effectiveness of these controls. I talk specifically about in-business control groups within the various businesses, corporate investment bank, global consumer group, and private bank. And I mentioned the increased transparency of processes. So the prior paragraph discusses or provides some examples of the business level control processes. So I'm pointing out to management that what they've done to date is not, it should, in order for these to become, continue to be effective control processes, they should note or they should take into account the following recommendations.
Can you tell me what is meant by the last bullet point on page 2? It says credit risk management initiatives regarding the various programs that address the credit risk management provisions of the written agreement. What did you have in mind when you were talking about credit risk, if you recall?
So it's part of a section which says, in addition to ensuring that business level controls are adequately validated by independent control functions, such as internal audit compliance, we will continue to monitor the following areas. So it's highlighting that examiners will continue to monitor this particular aspect, credit risk management initiatives. So the firms, and by initiatives, I mean the firms' processes that they've put in place to address the specific credit risk management provisions of the written agreement. So specifically, we will be monitoring continued progress in consistently implementing franchise risk reviews and related approval processes.
Were there any particular products or exposures that you had in mind when you were talking about credit risk at that time?
It was a fairly broad statement, so I was really talking about credit risk in its broadest sense. Credit risk that may emanate from various products, not one particular product. Because the provisions were sufficiently broad where they weren't focused on one type of product. Even structured finance is a class of products. It's not necessarily one type of product. So.
So at that time in September 2005, do you recall if it was your view that the written agreement should be lifted at that time or whether you thought it should remain in effect?
At that time, that letter was specifically referring to the examination work. So what we were doing was validating our assessment of how far the firm has came at that time in terms of their remediation plan and regarding the provisions of the written agreement. We weren't prepared at that time to make an assessment of whether we'd lift or not. I believe the OCC had some additional work that they wanted to conduct, and I believe they did that work in early 2006, but it was one step in that process of trying to decide whether we should lift or leave it in place.
So are we 33?
Yes.
Okay, document I'm marking as 33 is a letter dated November 7th, 2005, Bates number 45 to 51. The letter is to Homer Hill, and it's from Thomas Rollauer. I believe it's the response. Mm-hmm. Do you recall this letter?
Yes.
And what did you, if you want to take a few minutes to skim it, go right ahead.
So they provided a fairly detailed response to our recommendations and the letter of September 05.
So is it a fair characterization to say that what they were telling the Federal Reserve Bank was that we've received your recommendations and we're going to go ahead and implement them? Is that a fair basic generalization?
That's our expectation.
Thank you. So turn to the bottom of page 3. They distinguish between a flow business and a non-flow business on the bottom of page 3 and top of page 4. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to me what is a flow business and what's a non-flow business?
Well, they describe it as a non-flow business as those transactions that are already subject to one or usually multiple control processes because of the application of key policies or otherwise. So it's essentially, if it's subject to multiple control processes and multiple policies and control mechanisms, then it's non-flow tends to be more of a structured business, whereas flow tends to be more, somewhat more vanilla based.
It's not a difference between stuff you're moving through a pipeline and selling to third parties and stuff you're keeping on your own balance sheet?
It was my recollection that, it is my recollection that they didn't associate it with movement per se, but of a characterization of structure versus non-structured.
So at the conclusion of that exam, you said the OCC still had work to do. It wasn't that you had a difference of opinion with the OCC. It was just a difference in timing between their review of compliance with the formal agreement and various transactions in your review.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's a it was more of a timing issue. The internal audit group had some additional remediation that they were going to do, and we weren't in any particular rush to lift the agreement or make that decision. We wanted to make sure it was something that we were comfortable with.
All right. Moving on to your next life as a credit risk person. Mm-hmm. Last document is 34. And it's a memo documenting a meeting that occurred on July 28, 2006 among the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and some Citigroup risk participants. And it's, did I say that the date? August
16, 2006.
July 28th. The dates are 884 to 886. So the memo is dated August, but it references a meeting in July. Do you sort of generally recall that meeting?
Yes, I do.
So what was the purpose of that meeting?
It was to discuss various trends in the market related to credit risk. So that involved emerging credit market trends, various portfolio management approaches, hedge fund risk management challenges, and broader credit risk, counterparty credit risk issues. And this is a meeting between various Fed management and fairly senior Citigroup management within the credit risk organization.
Right. Okay, let's go to page 2. And I'd like to direct your attention to the last bullet point. So the last bullet point starts off by saying a liquidity crisis will cause significant repricing pressure, especially within traditional bridge lending and CDO products. I take it this was a statement that one of the participants at the meeting made, presumably someone from
one of the Citigroup participants, yes.
Seeing that statement, do you recall sort of what they were referring beyond the blank words on the beyond the bare words on the page?
I don't recall just what's written there. Sounds like they're describing a fairly standard liquidity risk.
So at the time in the summer of 2006, were you familiar with the manner in which Citigroup was funding CDOs through special purpose entities where they had the super senior tranches of the CDOs held in the special purpose entity? And that special purpose entity then issued asset-backed commercial paper supported by liquidity puts from Citibank?
I was not, in the sense that my focus while on the Citigroup team was to coordinate and monitor the wholesale credit risk or commercial lending activity. So that type of activity would have fallen under more of a capital markets discipline. So that would have been covered by other Fed and OCC capital markets examiners.
So in general, with respect to assets that were off balance sheet in SPEs or SPVs or SIVs, those things weren't something you viewed as part of your credit risk portfolio, that was?
Only to the extent of if there was a some type of backup line or some type of lending facility that rolled up through the credit risk management MIS or reporting. But in a sense, the credit those were credit assets, but they weren't necessarily credit risk in the way that I was monitoring credit risk at the firm.
Did you do any monitoring at that time of the approximately $25 billion in liquidity puts that had been issued by Citibank NA to the SPEs?
I did not specifically.
Do you know if anyone at the Fed did a credit review of the liquidity puts?
I don't recall.
Okay. So now we're at the point of the program where you get to make any comments that you think are important for the record. I don't think I mentioned it this time, but we're required to write a report by December 15, 2005, that goes to the President and Congress and sort of explains this past financial crisis as well as the problems at the large banks. So to the extent you feel that there's something I haven't asked that you think is important, even if it's outside the scope of this narrow review we've just discussed about today, I want to give you an opportunity to make those comments to pass on what you think is important information about what's gone on.
I really don't have anything additional to add.
Okay.
I'd just like to add one thing to the record. Obviously, you know, the documents that that you took out of the database plus the substance of the witnesses' statements today are confidential supervisory information.
Right.
We've been authorized to provide that to you
right.
pursuant to the confidentiality agreement, so I'm just making clear for the record that
right.
all of that is...
It's all subject to the...
Right.
Understood.
Okay.
So it's a little after 5:20.